That's it. I'm not drinking.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our Joint Committee on Transportation, Preservation, and Modernization this lovely Monday, June 5th, 2017. How nice it is to have a full house this evening on the evening when we begin to take testimony on House Bill 2017-3. We are delighted this evening to have, of 10 panels, our first panel welcoming Governor Kate Brown to address us this evening. Governor, we're delighted to have you here. We have a number of people signed up to testify this evening, so we're going to have a very full agenda, but how lovely it is to have you here to kick us off tonight. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Madam Co-Chair. As we've got Mr. Co-Chair and Madam Co-Chair, for the record, Kate Brown, serving as Oregon Governor. Thanks so much for the opportunity to be here with you tonight, and I can't imagine any other place I would rather be than here with you
Thank
tonight.
Thank you. We're delighted to hear that.
A couple I could think of.
Thanks, Senator Meyer. I want to start by thanking you for your hard work on developing a way forward for Oregon's transportation system. The work you've done will do more than fix our bridges and roads. It will leverage the capacity of our existing roadways to reignite our most vital economic engine and provide a vehicle out of poverty for our struggling families. I also want to take this opportunity to highlight the work the Vision Panel did to lead up to this moment. Last year, I asked the panel to travel the state to see what I have seen, that Oregon's communities all share the same values. We want a strong economy with good jobs for all. We want safe and livable communities, and we want our people to be healthy. You learned the same thing from your extensive visits around the state. And the transportation package we have today is the translation of these values into action. Instead of developing legislation behind closed doors, the package you have produced is one that truly reflects the needs of our communities. The communities told us many things, but they said clearly, we need a transportation system that is in good repair. We need a system that is resilient to natural disasters. We need a system that will help the state reach our greenhouse gas reduction targets. And we need a transit system that will support healthy and livable communities. Transit is literally a vehicle to lift families out of poverty. I look forward to seeing this package move forward through the legislative process, and you have my full support in getting a transportation package this legislative session. We are presented with the unique opportunity to lift up our economy and our communities at the very same time. Oregon cannot wait. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your leadership.
Governor, thank you so much for joining us this evening, and I think you've set the perfect tone for the rapidity of which we have to get through these panels this evening, so we appreciate that as well.
I will be watching every moment from the screen upstairs.
Greatly appreciate your support.
Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, Governor. Our next panel, I would like to call up our Oregon Transportation Commission Chair, Ms. Tammy Bainey. Commissioner, thank you for being here this evening as well.
Yes, and I will use brevity as well, taking a note from the Governor. Co-chairs and co-vice chairs, thank you for the opportunity to be here this evening. My name is Tammy Bainey, and I am the chair of the Oregon Transportation Commission. I want to begin also by applauding your efforts. I think that you've put forward a very innovative and bold transportation proposal. I think it'll bring along a lot of spirited dialogue, for which that's where we truly get to the essence of effective change. Most importantly, though, it shows your willingness to invest in our state and meet the needs across the state and in our communities. As our governor just mentioned, recently both this panel as well as the governor's visioning panel, of which I co-chaired with Greg Cantor, we went around the state. It did not matter where we were, whether we were in Rogue Valley or we were in Coos Bay or in Pendleton. We heard about the challenges, and most importantly, to preserve and maintain the system that we have today. We also heard that congestion poses a problem not only just to the economy of Oregon, but also to the quality of life. And last but not least, Oregonians want a greater investment in public transportation, and it matters in both the rural and urban parts of our state. So with that noted, the OTC developed an investment strategy strategy at your request to help you put together a package in which a proposal, rather, and we are pleased that this draft legislation in turn reflects both what you heard from Oregonians and what the Commission believes needs to be done to strengthen our transportation system. This truly is a historic bill and a heavy lift, but also something that I think Oregonians will thank you at a later date for your wisdom and courage as this package goes forward. Let me also note, there were a lot of comments that I will make that are in my submitted testimony, but let me speak to a variety of various ideas that are in the elements of this bill, focusing on the Transportation Commission's role and, in particular, the accountability provisions. As chair of the commission, I want you to know that I support the direction on accountability. I think, first and foremost, that not only do we stand ready, but that is critical if we are going to be investing money in our transportation system. I think that also that will help us ensure the delivery of accountable, efficient, and transparent projects, and that also enhance the performance of our system. I share your goal of providing transparency and accountability also, though, without increasing costs and bureaucracy. As a locally elected official, that's something that we're always looking to do. As we move forward, the OTC will work to identify ways to implement this bill in a way that limits the workload for our cities, counties, partner agencies, as well as the agency of ODOT. Cost-benefit analysis, I'd like to touch on that for a moment. I also support your direction to use cost-benefit analysis, which is a critical and important tool to ensure that we are getting the maximum benefit from scarce resources. However, as written right now, the cost-benefit analysis requirement has the potential of possibly being costly and adding a significant time commitment when applied to the hundreds of projects that are in our STIP, many of which are very small. So it is difficult to compare the difference between a new or a modernized bridge or to a repaving project to a culvert project. So I am recommending that the cost and time commitment be possibly reduced by putting a threshold or a dollar amount, or possibly even considering the complexity of a project. As we go forward, we'll be looking forward to having a conversation about language revisions that could get us to that. Audits. I'd also like to support the direction that the Commission right now is already moving in the direction of strengthening our role in terms of audits. They truly are a way to make sure that it's a business tool that provides opportunities for efficiency and the functions of an agency. The Commission recently developed a plan to deepen our engagement in audits. We have a member on the ODOT Audit Committee and receive all audit reports today. The OTC will now provide a greater input on the work plan and et cetera. And we would ask, though, that this not be placed under the Commission, but rather if we work to understand the language that you were hoping to achieve so that the auditor has independence but maybe does not report directly to the Commission. Lastly, I'd like to talk about the Continuous Improvement Advisory Committee, of which I also support. As noted, ODOT has an audit committee that includes members of the Commission. I'm recommending that we look to reconfigure and elaborate on that committee to be able to add those functions, which will ensure that we are not duplicating efforts, but also adding the critical link of the audit function as well. There are comments in my submitted testimony in reference to a website, Commission staff, but in conclusion, let me say that I'm grateful to the work that you have all done. We stand ready to perform the tenets that are in the bill. We want to assure the accountability that you are asking of us and in which we have oversight for today. And I'd also like to say that we are supportive and proud of the work of the men and women that are at ODOT doing the work today. They are good public stewards doing great work, and we want to make sure that you understand that we do understand that there are opportunities for improvement, but we stand ready to engage in that conversation. So with that, I will open it for questions if you should have them. And also, I have submitted testimony, which I understand may not have been quite hitting the record yet.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Johnson.
I have two questions. The first one is, if you could amplify a little bit on, as in your role as OTC chair, why would you not want the auditor to report report to the OTC, and what would be your suggested alternative?
Okay, Madam Chair and Senator Johnson. Not unlike at the county, we have an internal auditor, and in terms of professional standards, that independence function is important. They wouldn't want to perform an audit and unveil something that then they're concerned about possibly losing their job. And so what we have done is set up a structure in which they report to the county administrator. Here it would be the director, but in consultation with the chair, and so that they have autonomy in a way, but it's a give and take. It's in coordination and consultation rather than being a direct report. So we have oversight of the work plan and direct the work and also engage in the oversight.
And I want to follow up a little bit on your comments about accountability and a threshold for the cost-benefit analysis. Speaking to you as a county official, I would be curious to know about municipal accountability in terms of projects. There are thresholds right now that sometimes are a little controversial, and I don't know how you would see that happening. Would it be fair to have municipal and county accountability built into the accountability standards of this bill?
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, I think we have a responsibility to all be accountable and to be transparent. And so I would look for language that supports that. And I certainly think that as a department, that's a direction that we will be headed and should be going. So my hope is, though, that we do not look at a small culvert project the same as we would look at maybe a $50 million infrastructure project. I would want to make sure that there's some way to parse through and not use the same lens on every component of our system.
I agree with you. I'm just thinking about where the thresholds for doing a project out to bid versus doing it internal to a city or a county is. And we don't have to amplify. I don't want to chew up any more time, but that's
okay.
Where I'm headed.
I do have further comments, though.
A real quick question.
Please. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tammy, I'm curious your perspective on the different tools that are being provided for the OTC. One of the tools I'm interested in knowing about is your position on tolling.
Okay. Madam Chair, Representative Olson, as stated, we have a responsibility to ensure a safe and efficient transportation system for Oregon. I don't believe that we are in a place where we can take any option off the table. I think that tolling is one that will require further exploration, but I think that it's an important one that we continue moving forward to engage in and seek answers.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Madam Chairman, thank you very much for being here this evening.
Yes, absolutely.
I'd like to call
thank
up our next panel swiftly. I understand there was a negotiation with an additional panel member that the testimony is limited to 2 minutes for this panel. First, I'd like to call up Mr. Tom Hughes and Andy Dyke. Since we only have four chairs, we'll do this in two sections. Thank you for joining us this evening, gentlemen. We appreciate you being here. Patrick is a tough negotiator. Welcome.
Thank you. Co-chairs and vice co-chairs and committee members, thank you very much for having me tonight. My name is Tom Hughes, and I'm the president of the Metro Council. I represent more than 1.5 million residents of the greater Portland metro area. On behalf of our region and on behalf of the chair of JPAC, or the Joint Policy Advisory Committee on Transportation, which I am not, but Craig Dirksen, who is the chair, was unable to make it tonight, and I'm here on his behalf to urge that you adopt the transportation investment proposal before you. I've been involved in transportation as a metro councilor, as a city mayor, as a planning commissioner out in Hillsborough for over four decades. And I can honestly say that this is the most comprehensive transportation funding package that I have seen proposed by the state. It is a balanced proposal. It addresses maintenance. It fixes key highway bottlenecks. It invests in transit service, and it addresses bike and pedestrian needs. Partnering with JPAC in our region to jointly invest in fixing the three bottleneck projects is a transformative approach to addressing long-term congestion. Our state and our region cannot rely on the federal government to fix our roads and fund transit. It's up to us. Our region is ready to step up. We are ready to go Dutch. And I'm here to urge you, one, to raise the state gas tax and state vehicle fees in order to make these critical investments, spreading costs across all users. I support the creation of the Metro Congestion Relief District, and our region is ready to do our part to fund the major bottleneck projects. The Metro region's healthy economy and great quality of life will continue to attract people at a fast pace, and we need to be able to continue to invest in our transportation system to ensure that we can keep the economy growing and maintain our quality of life. I want to thank you for the very hard work that you have done to construct this proposal, and I urge you to move this balanced, visionary package forward to adoption.
Thank you, sir.
Co-chairs McEwen and Beyer. For the record, I'm Andy Dyke. I'm the chair of the Washington County Board, and I, too, am second string tonight. I'm representing my colleague, Commissioner Rogers, who serves on JPACT, who also could not be with us tonight. I'll start by commending this committee for what I believe is a transformative and comprehensive transportation package. I'm impressed with the scale and the thought that went into HB 2017. Because from my perspective, the process used to build this is in large part responsible for its scale and comprehensive nature. While I don't want to dwell on Washington County's own Major Streets Transportation Improvement Program, which is what we call MSTIP, I do think that there are some parallels worth mentioning. From the public process standpoint, I can't help but see a mirror image of our own transportation investments. MSTIP is a success due to the public support due to public support and is largely the reason why we've been able to invest nearly $900 million over the last two decades and are on our fifth MSTIP program. I welcome the transparency and accountability sections within this bill because I know firsthand it will reinforce the expectations from Oregonians that these projects will be delivered in much the same way as we've done with MSTIP. I truly believe that when you add up the two statewide conversations that took place over the last 2 years and multiple public meetings since the beginning of session, that you have met a high bar of public transparency in building this package. From my perspective representing Washington County, you've met the bar of public expectation of going big or go home. To help frame why Washington County will advocate for support with many interests back home, first of all, congestion in our region has been studied to death. This transportation package will make a significant dent in our region's congestion relief, but only with a system-wide investment of the three principal bottlenecks. As much as I may focus on Highway 217 being in Washington County, I know that without investments in the I-5 Rose Corridor and the 205 projects, there is no comprehensive improvement in our region. The multimodal theme built into this package also brings significant long-term investments in transit. These investments provide substantial value in livability by providing options to the daily commute. Locally, Washington County has a transportation strategy that invests in roads and bike path projects that connect neighborhoods and improve safe routes to school. And lastly, partnerships between local and state government is critical. A basic tenet of Commissioner Rogers' perspective is something that I share 100%, and that is the concept of skin in the game, or as President Hughes said, going Dutch. It simply means that regional or local government should step up to the plate and share in the investment. And as you know, the local surcharge for our region will generate 50% share of regional bottlenecks. I know Commissioner Rogers would emphasize this, and I believe it needs to be a key template to build projects of significance in the future across Oregon. Washington County has a history of leadership that combines a conversation with all of our partners, and this package delivers on a commitment to find a long-term funding template. This package will make a significant dent in the immediate needs, but it also establishes a template for making significant investments in the future. And I thank you very much for hearing my testimony this evening.
Thank you, gentlemen. Senator Johnson?
Two questions. Thank you very much, Mr. Hughes, Chair Hughes. Are you ready without hesitation to impose taxes on your citizens in order to fulfill your promise of going Dutch?
Absolutely. I think that's, in fact, one of the exciting things I think about this proposal is the opportunity for us to recognize in the metro area that, in fact, there is a special needs that we have that exceed the needs in other parts of the state, and that we need to step up to those needs on a regional level. And I have always believed that some sort of regional funding is going to be necessary in order to bridge the gap between the funding that we can no longer rely on at the federal level, the funding the state is not always able to provide, and the inability of the local jurisdictions to provide much more than just pure maintenance money to fund their projects. And so I think that that intermediate phase as a way to collect, to raise revenue, is going to be one of the, I think, one of the very special things about this bill.
One follow-up. Do you have any hesitation moving forward with these special metropolitan planning organization congestion districts that if they decide, whoever that they are, Eugene, Medford, decide to go halvesies on a project, that they will then have the ability to dictate the projects that would become local projects to the detriment of the entire system? I'm worried about state highways, and could the state highway projects be subordinated to local projects as long as the MPOs are saying, we'll go Dutch, we get to pick?
So you mean the local MPOs superseding the opinions of the Transportation Commission?
Mm-hmm.
Senator, I don't know that as the head of one of the MPOs, I would have as much concern about that as others might. But I think it's a reasonable thing as a policy question for you all to contemplate here. In many regards, those projects, even though they're large to us, are small enough that it almost is like it would almost be like the tail wagging the dog. And I just think that the collaboration between the state is so important to what happens at the local level. Dutch only means we pay a portion, and we're counting on the state to pay the other portion. So I don't think that's as big a concern as it might be, but I think it's worth contemplating as you work your way through this bill.
Thank you.
Representative McLean.
Well, Mr. Hughes, you gave a good comment on the fact that these were not just our MPO important top mega projects for relief of congestion. They were statewide significance.
Right.
And so in answering that question for Senator Johnson, my question would be, isn't there a process that we go through, both in our MPOs and also with our Transportation Commission, to talk about the statewide consequences and the statewide, purpose that's there? Because in the language that I've read in the 298, it says it has to go through not just the MPOs. It's brought to the Transportation Commission, and it's brought through the queue, and it's brought through the process to make sure it's of statewide significance.
Co-chairs and Representative McLean, that's exactly correct, and it's in the process through the what we call the RTP, or Regional Transportation Project. Those projects have to be validated at the state level, and the State Transportation Commission has a final say on which of those projects are going to get funded with state funding. I think that we wrap ourselves in enough process primarily in order to get public opinion, but I think we wrap ourselves in enough process that a particular MPO driving the state's agenda is, even us, is not likely to take place.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
I would like to call up Denny Doyle, Dan Salzman, and Jim Bernard, please. On deck we have Mr. Pope, Commissioner Pope, Commissioner Lycan, and Mr. Vial. I'll note on OLIS, I've had a couple of people ask, there is posted down at the bottom of testimony House Bill 2017-3 index. So the staff was able to get an index put together. If you'd like to look at it, it's there. You could print it out and put it in with your 298 pages if it's helpful.
Certainly. Members, we also produced at Senator Monroe's request a small 3-4 page executive summary of the bill. It turns out 300-page bill. It's an 8-page executive summary, but it's there at the members' desks. We were asking if you would review that, and if you have any changes, we'll provide it electronically to you tonight. If you have any changes, get them back to me. We'll make them, and then we'll make this public and put it on Knowles tomorrow.
Great. Thank you, Patrick. Gentlemen, welcome this evening. We're delighted to have you here.
Good evening, co-chairs Byers and McCowan. And
sorry, it's McEwen, just McEwen. To clear Sorry. The air. Happens Sorry. All the time.
I'm watching the timer.
You get a pass.
Thank you. Okay. Co-chairs Boquist and Vence and members of the Joint Committee, I'm Beaverton Mayor Denny Doyle. Last fall, members of this committee came to Washington County to hear our concerns about the state of Oregon's transportation system and our urging for a big, bold, comprehensive transportation package to address those concerns. You've done it. You've nailed it. HB 2017 delivers solutions across Oregon and for all modes of transportation. Through investments in transit, bike and pedestrian paths, and targeted roadway improvements, this package addresses congestion so we all spend less time stuck in traffic trying to get to work, to a doctor's appointment, or to a soccer practice. Year after year after year, congestion is the top request from our city satisfaction survey. In other words, fix it. HB 2017 dedicates new and innovative funding to tackle the bottlenecks, such as Highway 217, that may clog Ontario onions from getting to market and high-tech components from reaching Beaverton and Hillsborough, and invest in the maintenance of employment serving roads and bridges. It requires both innovative planning for future transportation needs and accountability for getting results, which lowers taxpayers' costs and project surprises. And HB 2017 provides dedicated funding for safe routes to schools to address the lack of sidewalks and paths needed to help keep our communities and, most importantly, our children safe. Last, as a voting member of JPAC, representing the cities of Washington County, I do support the creation of the Metro Congestion Relief District and am ready to act to do our part to fund the major bottleneck projects and other regional transportation priorities. Thank you very much for all your work. Thanks for the transparency, and let's take this across home plate. I strongly urge passage of HB 2017. That was a minute and 55 seconds.
Perfect, sir. Thank you. You're my hero so far.
Co-chairs Welcome. And vice chairs, thank you very much for allowing us the opportunity to speak today. I'm Jim Bernard. I'm chair of the North Clackamas Board of County Commissioners and an alternate to JPAC. I want to express my sincere appreciation to each of you for crafting a comprehensive, robust transportation package. HB 2017 is bold and puts us on a path to more fiscally sustainable and forward-thinking transportation system. Clackamas County is a true microcosm of the state. We have 1,400 miles of paved county roads, plus miles of roads in 17 cities, numerous urban and rural bus lines, and the state's newest light rail line, and a county-operated ferry. We're ground zero for Oregon's most congested freeway, I-205. We're also thrilled that the bill dedicates funding to the three regional projects, including I-205 between Stafford and Oregon City. On behalf of our county commission, we support the creation of the Metro Congestion Relief District to help fund these bottleneck projects. We are ready to act to ensure that this becomes a reality. By adding a third north and southbound lane, 6-mile stretch of I-205 will greatly improve travel time for freight and commuters who currently experience terrible congestion in this major corridor. The planned seismic upgrades to the Abernathy Bridge will enhance this lifeline over the Willamette River, and thank you again for this opportunity to support HB 2017.
Thank you, sir. Welcome.
Co-chairs McEwen and Beyer and members of the committee. I'm Portland City Commissioner Dan Saltzman. I oversee our Transportation Bureau, and I'm also a voting member of JPAC. And I just want to congratulate the committee. I know you've worked very hard, and I think you have come up with a successful piece of legislation in HB 2017. It makes a smart, bold, and balanced investment in our state and local transportation system. So thank you for your hard work. We do believe it addresses some of the most significant issues facing our state: traffic safety, road and bridge maintenance, affordability, and congestion. Last year was the deadliest since 2003 for traffic fatalities in Portland. we had 44 fatalities. Over half of all serious injuries and fatalities occur on just 8% of our roads within the city. HB 2017 provides critical funding to address our death corridors and to respond to the growing call for funding for safe routes to school projects and other active transportation projects as well. Last year, the city filled over 12,000 potholes, and this is a clear sign of how far we have fallen behind in our road maintenance efforts. So HB 2017 is crucial to ensure that we can continue to maintain our roads before they reach points of endless potholes and costly rebuilds. Last year, Portlanders, as did Oregonians, struggled with major affordability issues resulting from higher housing and transportation costs. We believe HB 2017's payroll tax will allow TriMet to establish a low-income fare and to increase the frequency and reliability of service. And last but not least, Portlanders struggle with congestion, as you've heard from all the panel members here. That's the number one topic of conversation everywhere I go, as I'm sure it is for you as well as us. And so we think that the HB 2017 provides us a strategic investment in both local and regional priorities that can provide congestion relief. And it also provides clear direction on a tolling and congestion pricing strategy that ensures we get the best use of our existing and future investments. I also, as a voting member of JPAC, strongly support the Metro Congestion Relief District, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, sir. Senator Johnson.
If memory serves me correctly, Portland Bureau of Transportation struggled last winter with the question of to salt or not to salt. How do you feel about the salt mandates in this bill?
Well, when I took over the Bureau of Transportation in January, it was also, as you all know, a very severe winter episode we were having, and I actually instructed the Bureau to acquire salt. And we did put salt down for the first time, at least in recent memory, on certain roads that had storm sewers with them. So, I believe salt is one of the tools that we need to employ.
Thank you.
Further questions? Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming down. Oh, I'm sorry. Hold up.
I have to jump on the salt wagon
right
here.
Salt wagon.
There had been some rumor that somebody on the committee up here had been bought off by a salt lobbyist, and that's how this had gotten into the package. And I just want to assure whoever is interested in this issue that the concept has been driven totally by safety. And if someone has challenges with the paragraph in there concerning salt, let us know. We can take it out. But the idea is based exactly on what you just mentioned. People are getting hurt, mm-hmm. And so the question is, how do we address that issue? That's why the paragraph is in the
right.
bill.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thanks.
I'd like to call up Commissioner Pope, Commissioner Lycan, and Mr. Vile, please. And on deck we have Councillor Evans, Mayor Calloway, and Mr. Finley. And who will be joining us by telephone?
Oh, cool.
Gentlemen, thank you for traveling up today. We appreciate your attendance.
Okay. I've been told I'm leaving it off, so.
Aha. Welcome, Commissioner.
Co-chairs McEwen and Beyer, co-vice chairs Vince and Boquist. First, for the record, my name is Sid Lycan. I serve as a Lane County Commissioner. And thank you for the opportunity to testify on this really remarkable piece of work you have all put together. Today I'm speaking as co-chair of the Associate of Oregon County's Transportation Committee, and I also serve as chair of the Lane Area Commission on Transportation as well. First of all, let me express our gratitude for the time and seriousness you put into this effort. This package is ambitious, comprehensive, and forward-looking to a level that I believe no other transportation funding proposal has ever previously reached. It will also allow Oregon to be economically competitive with our neighboring states on all sides that have recently passed their own comprehensive transportation packages. It cannot be said strongly enough that economic development in Oregon depends greatly on the ability of people to get to and from work and for businesses to move their goods to the markets they serve. As many of you know, I served as a mayor of the city of Springfield for 10 years, and working closely with Senator Beyer and Representative Lively, my two legislators, I can tell you just transportation investment has absolutely transformed parts of Springfield into an economic giant in Lane County. For counties, as a level of government that maintains the largest number of road miles in the state, this funding package has the potential to reverse a long-standing decline in our road system and provide real stability going forward. To speak specifically to several aspects of the bill that are core to counties, we particularly appreciate the work of Representative Vance on the amount of funding dedicated to the maintenance and preservation of the existing system. Our county roads needs study identified a massive backlog in deferred maintenance, and the phased-in gas tax and registration fee increases the current draft will provide the kind of increase that will make a noticeable impact on the conditions of our roads. We also very much appreciate the favorable response to the proposal counties developed that would redistribute $5 million annually of new money to counties that have large amounts of road miles to maintain, but few registered vehicles, and thus fare poorly under the funding formula. As a commissioner of one of the counties that would be giving up some new money, we recognize that the state must function as one seamless transportation system. We cannot allow whole sections of the state to deteriorate back to gravel roads. Our citizens deserve better. Counties also support the innovative approach developed to address the growing problem of congestion around the state, in particular the Portland metro area that is impeding people and goods from getting where they need to go. Creating a mechanism for MPOs to provide a local match is a tremendous step forward and may allow projects to get funded that otherwise would either not happen or result in additional money being diverted away from maintenance and preservation of the existing system. Again, thank you for the opportunity to comment. We stand ready to work with you on any adjustments needed, but fully support the scope and intent of this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Co-Chair, Representative McEwen and Senator Beyer. For the record, my name is John Vile. I'm the Public Works Director for Jackson County, and I'm here representing the Association of Oregon County Engineers and Surveyors. House Bill 2017 addresses a wide spectrum of transportation solutions, but it's the legislation's ability to address maintenance and preservation that is the most significant to Oregon counties, especially rural Oregon. There's a saying amongst road officials and my peers that the first priority and the most important task to complete while doing road maintenance is drainage, and the second most important is drainage, and the third most important is drainage. This is not to make the point that ditches and culverts are the only thing that's important on the road, but it is to make the point that the routine maintenance that's done day after day of keeping the roads operational are extremely important. Things like putting chip seals on the roads to keep the water from infiltrating into the road and seal the road up so when you have freeze-thaw, you don't get potholes and the subsurface doesn't get contaminated. Things like pulling your shoulders so the water has a place to flow, and things like cleaning out your ditches so the water has a way to get away. These things are not exciting. They don't have ribbon cuttings associated with them, and people rarely get reelected when you do it well. But it is absolutely essential that this work gets done, and the problem is, with the current funding structure, it's not getting done. And the main reason it's not getting done is simple economics. I'll provide a couple of examples to make my point. I started doing this work in 1997, leading transportation maintenance and operations. And in 1997, I could buy chip seal oil, primary thing to do chip sealing with, for a little over $100 a ton. I opened bids last spring, and I was thrilled to get bids at $465 a ton. We had paid as high as $780 a ton. These are increases of 400 to 700%. We opened bids last spring for hot mix asphalt, where a few years ago I paid less than $20 a ton, now it's $51 a ton. We've seen similar increases in rock, concrete, equipment, labor, and during the same time period, we've seen an increase in revenue through the gas tax of 25%. That is simply an unsustainable model, and good roads are turning into fair roads are turning into poor roads. And probably the best example I'd give to that is last month we had an association meeting of all the road officials. And one of the main topics of discussion at that meeting was the number of roads that road officials simply have given up on because the roads are so poor in such poor shape that the cost to rehabilitate them is so high that they're simply tearing the asphalt out and returning them back to gravel roads. It's unfortunate that we find ourselves in this situation, and House Bill 2017 will do much to address that. Commissioner Lycan touched upon the County Roads Need Study from 2014. That study showed that for every dollar that we have, we need 25 cents more to complete just the routine maintenance, not counting pavement preservation. But if you count pavement preservation, for the $53 million that we spend currently, we need an additional $92 million. This legislation will go a long way to address this issue, and we're grateful for your leadership and for the hard work that you put in to doing this work. As you struggle through this bill, I'd ask you to remember, drainage. That routine maintenance is important. Thank you for your time.
We got it. Thank you, sir. Welcome.
Good evening, co-chairs, co-vice chairs, members of the committee. I'm Craig Pope, Polk County Commissioner, and I'm also here tonight speaking on behalf of AOC, Association of Oregon Counties, as the 2018 president-elect. A well-maintained and high-functioning transportation system is an essential part of a vibrant economy. Moving raw materials to producers, goods to market, and people to jobs and about their daily lives in a safe and efficient way is a key to prosperity for our citizens. I join in saluting the excellent work that has been done to date on this transportation package. The vision you have created that stretches across Oregon and across the 10 years of the initial investment is groundbreaking and compelling. For counties, the maintenance and preservation of the entire transportation system is a high priority. The increase in funding and the initial 10-year window should set the stage for an aggressive and consistent maintenance program that will make a real difference to our citizens and to our local economies. Counties recognize that Oregonians want to know where, when, and how their investment is being used and what is being accomplished. We are strong in our support of the accountability language in Sections 11 and 12 of the Dash 3 amendments. Counties look forward to working with the OTC, ODOT, and cities to develop a set of standards and a reporting system across jurisdictions accessible through a web-based tool that will be navigable and useful to citizens and policymakers. Along with this commitment to transparency and communications, counties are also vested to the greatest extent possible in making sure that transportation dollars are spent on the needs of the physical infrastructure on the ground. We support leaner and more responsive state agencies with stakeholder oversight that assure Oregon citizens get the systems they paid for. We would expect that this legislation will direct agency partners to develop a reporting system that is on time, cost-effective, and efficient to implement and operate so that we don't needlessly take funding away from our roads and bridges. In closing for our panel, I would like to take the opportunity again to express my appreciation for the leadership, vision, and challenging work that this committee has undertaken to bring this proposal forward for consideration. As you have heard from Commissioner Lycan and Mr. Vile, the proposal before us will greatly benefit maintenance, preservation, and modernization of transportation systems across this state and provide us a clear measure of certainty over the 10-year duration of the proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Questions for this panel? Seeing none, gentlemen, thank you so much for being here. I'd like to call up Councillor Evans, Mayor Calloway, and Mr. Finley, please. Mr. Finley, you'll be joining us by phone this evening.
Good evening, Mr. Lynn.
Hi, Mr. Finley. This is Patrick Bennett. I'm committee staff for the Joint Transportation Preservation and Modernization Committee here at the Oregon Legislature.
Yes, sir.
You are live on the phone with the 14-member committee here and about 100 people in the audience between two hearing rooms. So you'll be the third panelist on our three-person panel, but we called you so you could hear the other folks on your panel.
Okay, thank you very much.
Welcome, Mr. Finley. This is Chair McEwen. We're going to go ahead and begin with Councillor Evans, please.
Thank you. Excuse me one second. I'm going to take off my glasses. As my son said to me the other day, Dad, you're on the wrong side of 50. And I told him, no, I'm on the fun side of 50. So, good evening, co-chairs and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Greg Evans. I'm a city councilor in the city of Eugene. I am also on the board of directors of League of Oregon Cities, an organization representing all of Oregon's 241 cities. And this year, I am honored to be the chair of the National League of Cities Transportation and Infrastructure Services Committee. I'm pleased to be with you this evening to express on behalf of the League our strong and unified support for House Bill 2017. Is it perfect? No. But does it commit significant enough resources to stem the tide of transportation infrastructure degradation while at the same time making important policy and resource allocation improvements? Absolutely yes. By now, I'm sure that you have grown tired of hearing the admonition, go big or go home. However, House Bill 2017 is big, and you, your staff, and all the stakeholders in this room should be proud of this product. Another very positive aspect of this legislation is its diversity. By that, I mean it covers the landscape of transportation modes and systems. It enhances Oregon's transportation network as an interconnected system, and it spreads the burden for paying for this large package across a myriad of revenue sources so as to not unfairly penalize any one taxpayer or citizen or group of taxpayers or citizens. There is equity in what this package will purchase for the state as well by increasing, enhancing transportation availability and options. The phased-in approach for several initiatives contemplated in this bill, especially the gas tax and registration fee increases, is good public policy and will result in positive outcomes. The gas tax is a superbly elegant and simple user pay method for supporting highway, streets, roads, and road infrastructure. And while it won't last forever, its continued relevance to assisting cities in protecting and enhancing their transportation investments is critical. You will hear from another city representative in a few moments about the importance of beefing up the special city allotment. I will not belabor that point, except to acknowledge the understanding of the transportation plight of Oregon's small communities by your addition of $4 million annually to this grant program that it represents. On behalf of Oregon's sub 5,000 cities, thank you. You heard that congestion affects individuals and economies throughout the state, even where it doesn't exist. House Bill 2017 takes meaningful steps to address this and funds solutions creatively and fairly. You heard that transit is important everywhere in Oregon. This bill addresses that too. It dedicates funds to inner city public transit, also helpful to rural cities. And finally, there is the issue of accountability. The increased certainty that the accountability provisions of this bill, which raises and spends a lot of money, will create for you in the legislature and the public at large is critical not only to House Bill 2017's passage, but also to the future discussions relating to transportation infrastructure that might occur both inside this building as well as around the state. The League and the cities it represents will do their best to ensure that accountability standards are created and implemented fairly, efficiently, and result in the transparency and public education you seek. Again, the citizens of Oregon owe you a debt of gratitude for your hard work on House Bill 2017 thus far. And going to the whole thing of another sports metaphor, I'll do it anyway. Let's work together to push it across the finish line as the session winds down. I would be proud as an Oregonian and chair of the National League of Cities Transportation and Infrastructure Committee to tout to my colleagues around the United States the process by which this bill came together, as well as the results that it will achieve. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to answer questions that you might have.
Thank you, Councillor. Welcome, Mayor.
Good evening. Thank you, co-chairs and committee members, for the opportunity to come before you tonight. My name is Steve Calloway, and I'm the mayor of the city of Hillsborough. And on behalf of our entire council, I want to start by thanking this committee for all of your hard work and your leadership over the last year in developing this statewide transportation package. We believe the legislation before you today answers the call for a game-changing investment in our transportation system and is an example of legislators from both sides of the aisle and all parts of the state working together for the betterment of Oregon. We were all able to travel here today because past generations invested in roads, bridges, transit, and other modes of transportation infrastructure. These investments have supported and enabled our economy to grow and prosper and have made Oregon a wonderful place to call home. Now it's up to us once again to invest in our system, to maintain what we have, and to begin to build the future system that we all want and need. Congestion is straining economic growth and impacting the competitiveness of our businesses, and we simply can't wait any longer to act. It's causing increasingly longer commutes for our residents, resulting in families with less time to spend together and impacting Oregonians' qualities of life. Like my colleagues on JPAC and others in the metro region, I strongly support the innovative partnership between the state and our region that will begin to make important investments in congestion relief. We understand that an investment of this magnitude requires hard choices, and it costs all of our constituents real hard-earned money. But at the end of the day, not doing anything will cost far more. And that's why our city is aligned with the region and stands in strong support of the revenue-raising measures identified in this legislation and stands with you as it moves forward. Once again, thank you for your leadership and for your commitment to investing in Oregon's future.
Thank you very much, sir. And now, welcome, Mr. Finley, you're on.
Okay, thank you so much. Good evening, co-chairs and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lynn Finley. I'm the city manager for the city of Vail. I really, really appreciate your accommodating my testimony by telephone this evening, saving me the 14 hours of drive time through our beautiful state. You may recall I testified to you nearly a year ago at the field hearing you held in Ontario. My message to you today is substantially the same, except that I want to add my thanks to all of you and your staff for the hard work that has brought us to where we are tonight. I also want to specifically acknowledge the fact that you heard my message and the message of several other small city officials in Oregon about the unique needs confronting Oregon's small cities. House Bill 2017's commitment to increasing the special city allotment by $4 million annually, bringing the program total to $5 million, maintaining the 50-50 contribution split between ODOT and all the cities in Oregon is keeping with the rest of the package. You have indeed gone big. House Bill 2017's contribution to this program will provide a significant boost to small cities who, although receive their per capita share of state highway funds, still must often enhance their street maintenance and repair budgets with general or other funds or let our street assets continue to deteriorate. To the extent that this increase relieves that tension, residents of these small cities, your constituents, will benefit not only from better streets, but also increased protection for our other city services. The Treasure Valley Transmodal Facility is a second example of House Bill 2017 going big and responding to regional needs. This facility will greatly improve our ability to market our locally grown commodities nationally. Speaking for the League, I can tell you that the League of Oregon Cities is looking forward to consulting with ODOT and establish a small advisory city council or city advisory group to review project applications, make recommendations as to which cities should be awarded the grants. The other stipulations of the bill outlining project restrictions and other administrative procedures are consistent with the current program. After passage of House Bill 2017, the League will promptly get busy in assisting the establishment of advisory groups so that could be in place by the next round of grants. The league will also enter discussions with ODOT about increasing the current $50,000 grant cap to facilitate even more impactful projects. Again, thank you for hearing the small city's testimony during your field hearings last year and for taking these significant steps on their behalf. Another aspect of the bill that has the attention of small cities relatively to accountability. At first glance, the increased responsibilities are proposed in 2017 relative to reporting on street revenues, expenditures, and pavement conditions could seem rather daunting for small cities. Along with the privilege comes responsibility. Well, I will assure you that in working with the league and ODOT, small cities will assist in the development of methodologies, procedures, and formats that show both transparency and accountability for local management of transportation funding, and do so in a way that does not overburden small local governments. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Finley. Questions for this panel? All right, gentlemen, thank you so much for your testimony this evening.
Thank you.
Next, I would like to call up Adam Brown, Judge Joyce, Reed Sato, and Kit Camo. And on deck, we have Mr. Burns, Mr. Morrison, and Mr. McFarling, and Mr. Neal. Good evening. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Good evening.
In any order you like, gentlemen, and ladies. Ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair McEwen and Co-Chair Beyer and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dan Joyce. I'm judge of Malheur County Court. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this proposed transportation funding package and legislation, House Bill 2017. And I'd like to know how my neighbor in Vail got here in 14 hours, and it took me 16 round trips.
Now he drives.
First off, let me express my sincere gratitude for the tremendous amount of work that has gone into this legislation. As a group, you are tackling one of the biggest economic development issues this state faces, and our ability to sustain and grow our communities depends on a large degree to our ability to efficiently move people and goods. In particular, I'd like to thank the committee for the inclusion of AOC proposal of the redistribute of $5 million in new funds to counties such as ours that have a small population, low numbers of registered vehicles, and large road miles, 1,700 plus. This increase in funds will allow us to better preserve our existing road system and keep it from deteriorating to the point of needing to be reconstructed, which would increase our costs over time to the point of turning some of our roads back to gravel. Similarly, we support the increase to the small city grant allotment. I'd also like to extend our gratitude for including funds for the construction of the transmodal facility within the county. The ability for a more efficient, cost-effective movement of our agriculture goods and other commodities will make a huge difference to our eastern region. One other note, the historic snow event that occurred in Malheur County in the winter of 16-17 could have been either a 100-year or a 500-year storm or both. By March 1, all of our contingency funds were depleted. At the same time, we were short 12 employees and had no money to hire during the fiscal year. So the impact was considerable to Malheur County, and the impact on the roads and cost the road budget for maintenance and preservation was substantial, and we really won't know the total cost until fall. So in closing, I thank you again, committee, and assure you that Malheur County will support you in taking what I'm sure is not an easy vote, but one that which would have a major beneficial impact to Eastern Oregon, but all of Oregon. Again, Madam Chair, Co-Chairs McEwen, Co-Chair Beyer, and the committee, thank you for your willingness to invest in the eastern edge of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Madam Co-Chair McEwen and Mr. Co-Chair Beyer, my name is Adam Brown. I'm the city manager for the City of Ontario, and I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to speak to this issue, House Bill 2017, and thank you for your work on this bill. All three city managers in Malheur County met together a couple weeks ago for lunch and discussed our budgets. All three of our cities were having difficulty funding our street funds. All three of us were subsidizing our street funds with general fund money, which is desperately needed to keep our communities safe. My counterparts in those cities are turning planning on turning street roads within the city limits to gravel because they can't afford to maintain them. Well, in Ontario, we only have 11,500 people that call it home. We have 60,000 people that use the area for commerce, healthcare, and other industry. It's difficult to maintain a road system based on the backs of 3,200 taxpayers that live in the city. This bill greatly helps us address that challenge. The farming community is what supports our local economy. Ontario is known as the onion capital USA. Our area produces over a billion pounds every year, and that is only one of our crops. Oregon benefited by early investors in our system in 1884 by locating the railroad station there. It was a toss between Caldwell, Idaho, and Ontario, Oregon. That investment is what has made Oregon or Ontario, Oregon relevant today. A reinvestment in a transmodal facility is what will continue to make it relevant going forward. The transmodal facility is transformative. We are a regional community of cities in Oregon, Eastern Oregon and Idaho from three different counties, and we must give reasons for people to locate in Oregon to remain relevant. We have advantages to being in Oregon. We have disadvantages to being in Oregon. We need a competitive advantage, and this transmodal facility gives us that. We need a competitive advantage, and this transportation policy and package gives us that. Again, Madam Co-Chair McEwen and Co-Chair Beyer, thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of this legislation.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate you being here. Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Co-Chair McEwen and Co-Chair Beyer, members of the committee, my name is Reed Saito. I am a member of Snake River Produce Company based in Nessa, Oregon. I'm a former chairman of the State Board of Agriculture. I'm a lifelong resident of Malheur County, and I farm there and run a help run a packing and shipping operation and known as Snake River Produce LLC. And I thank you for the opportunity of to be able to testify today on House Bill 2017. The Treasure Valley, as Adam had mentioned, is known as the onion capital of the United States in many respects. Last year alone, we shipped 35,000 car lots of onions out of our valley, out of the Treasure Valley. And each car lot is 40,000 pounds. So I went to Nessa High School 50 years ago, so I'll let you do the math. And Malheur County is the biggest, in terms of production, the biggest onion-producing county in the United States. And thus we have a tremendous problem with chronic shortage of transportation out of our valley. Where there is a transloading facility in Wallula, Washington, the process is in Malheur County, we bring in the onions from harvest, we pack them into 50-pound sacks, load them into trucks, truck them 216 miles up to Wallula, Washington, to the where Rail-X is located, and then in a day or two, we'll see that exact same carload come back through the Treasure Valley on its way back east. So in order to have a transmodal facility located in Malheur County just makes a lot of sense, and for a lot of other reasons. We do have a lot of other commodities rather than just onions, and by having this shipping facility there, I think we can increase the production of other commodities there in Malheur County in the Ontario area. A couple other points is we do need this bill in order for us to maintain our paved roads, as was mentioned. In order for us to make it from the farms to the packing sheds, we need to have those roads in good shape so we can deliver in a timely manner. Where onions and many of our other products are perishable, it is very critical we keep the avenues open for us to make it to the markets in a timely manner. So besides that, the benefits, we would also be able to reduce congestion by using rail and not having the 35,000 carloads being shipped just by truck. So once again, members of the committee, I appreciate your allowing us to testify here. We are very supportive of this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Saito.
Ms. Kamo, welcome.
Good evening, Madam Co-Chair McEwen, Co-Chair Beyer. My name is Kit Kamo. I'm the Executive Director for the Snake River Economic Development Alliance. And thank you for this opportunity to testify today in support of House Bill 2017. I'm located in Ontario, Oregon. That's about 400 miles east. I know you know that because I can see Representative Benz there. And he's probably mentioned it four or five times. Our economic development organization covers Malheur County as well as two counties next door in the state of Idaho. Competition for new business between Oregon and Idaho is fierce. The transmodal facility has been on our radar screen for many years. The facility will draw jobs and businesses out of Idaho into Oregon. The Ontario-NISA area will become a transportation hub connecting businesses to the East Coast as well as points west. Several businesses that we've worked with looking to relocate into our region have expressed concern about how they would get their product out of the area and how would they get their raw materials in. This infrastructure is a critical component for the economic stability of the region and for Eastern Oregon. It will have a positive effect on other counties such as Baker, Union, Grant, and Harney. This investment into Oregon can change our future and will allow Eastern Oregon and Oregon to flourish. Thank you again for all your hard work on this bill, and our committee would entertain questions. Thank you.
Thank you for traveling here tonight. Questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Johnson.
I do. When we were down in that area during our trip around the state, there was considerable optimism that RailX was in a position to agree to all of the structures that would cause the transload to become a reality. I'm very supportive of the transload. Is that favorable relationship with RailX still there?
I believe it is. Our shippers in our area, we have an association called the Idaho Eastern Oregon Shippers Association. They've stayed in very close contact with the Union Pacific people, and in their preliminary talks, you know, it looks real favorable. They would be very interested in locating.
I'm glad that's the case. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Next up, we have our multimodal and passenger rail panel. We have Mr. Burns, Mr. Morrison, Mr. McFarling, and Mr. Neal, please. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good evening, Co-Chairs Beyer, McEwen, and esteemed members of the committee. My name is Michael Morrison. I reside in the Selwood neighborhood of Portland. I'm a board member of the Association of Oregon Rail and Transit Advocates, or AORTA, as it is commonly known, which recently, indeed this year, celebrated its 40th anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
As a nonprofit advocating for passengers using not only rail, but also all modes of transit, as well as bicycle and pedestrian facilities in an integrated system that reduces Oregonians' dependence on highways and driving. As the committee moves forward in its work, I would recommend that you do seek to incorporate some of the fine work that was done by the Oregon Passenger Rail Leadership Council, which made a number of recommendations which may be very helpful in implementing the vision of this panel. They proposed tripling service passenger rail with cost-efficient upgrades to the existing Union Pacific route, benefiting passenger rail, freight rail, and I-5 drivers by easing freeway capacity demands. Indeed, one of the best ways to alleviate some of the congestion on Interstate 5 for motorists is to entice commuters out of their automobiles, out from behind the wheel of their cars, and onto modern and efficient passenger rail. I would like to yield the remainder of my time to my colleague, Mr. McFarland.
Yes.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mike. Go home or go big. Go big or go home. Rail programs in Washington, California, and
sir,
California
we'll need your,
are
I'm
going
sorry,
big.
Sir. We'll need your name for the record, please.
I'm sorry. Dan McFarling, also a director of AORTA.
Thank you so much.
Rail programs in Washington and California are going big. We are treading water. In this year, the state of Washington is adding 8 new 125-mile-an-hour Siemens Charger locomotives, the most modern and efficient low-emission diesel-electric passenger locomotives in the world. Washington is adding new passenger-only direct trackage and a new station in the Tacoma area. Washington's corridor is already double-tracked, and with the Washington legislature's help, part of the trackage is triple-tracked. In Oregon, we rely in large part on a single-track line. Washington is adding two additional round trips between Portland and Seattle. Washington shows true leadership and receives significant federal funding because of that leadership. California is even more impressive. Oregon is the missing link on the West Coast. We adopted a climate action plan, and we talked about freeway expansion and taxing low-emission vehicles, actions that would move us in the opposite direction. Last month, cities in Central Oregon, the Willamette Valley, and the Oregon coast lost intercity public transportation because we're not doing enough. One important step we need to take will have no impact on the state budget and the potential, and will have great potential for reducing the budget in the future. The legislature needs to refer to the voters an amendment that allows transportation dollars to be used for the most effective transportation possible, similar to what is done in Washington and California. Maintenance of existing infrastructure should be the top priority. Funds for new infrastructure must be spent wisely. We need to encourage the public discussion. A constitutional amendment would help do that. A constitutional referral would help do that. Adding road capacity in urban areas encourages sprawl and increases congestion and maintenance costs. That is a recipe for long-term budget disaster. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Gentlemen?
Yes, co-chairs McEwen and Beyer and committee members. For the record, my name is John Burns. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Port of Coos Bay. I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here this evening and voice our support.
Gentlemen, can you stay? There may be questions for this panel, if you don't mind, sir. Do you mind staying just a little bit longer? Great, thank you. Oh, okay. That's right. That's fine. Mr. Burns, all right. Continue.
and voice our support for HB 2017-3. On behalf of the Oregon International Port of Coos Bay in Southwest Oregon, I really would sincerely like to offer my expression of appreciation for the significant efforts and energies that were put forth by the committee in bringing forth a package that makes a lot of sense for the future of Oregon. The committee extended an enormous amount of time, effort, and energy over the past year, crisscrossing the state, engaging stakeholders, and examining the key issues that confront Oregon's transportation system, developing creative solutions, all of which have been reflected
in this package. The proposed package will have a significant impact on the state of Oregon's intermodal transportation network and future economic development in the state. Connect Oregon, it's a fundamentally important part of the future of the structure and infrastructure of Oregon. Whether it's our small airports being able to tap into Connect Oregon to help them secure FAA grants, or whether it's our railroads that help to keep themselves sound. I'd like to commend you for the significant increase in funding available through the Connect Oregon program. The port has utilized the funds for a number of projects along the Coos Bay rail line, including the acquisition of that line. Reinstating rail service was essential in preserving economic viability for Oregon's southern coast. The port received Connect Oregon 3 funds to rehabilitate bridges and trestles along that line. And our most recent award, Connect Oregon 7, or 5 rather, went a long way in helping us to rehabilitate 9 tunnels along that line, all of which are 100 or more years old. Since the inception of the program, the funding available has in each successive cycle slowly diminished. With the draft transportation package, the program will be nearly restored to the original budget of $100 million. This will amplify the impacts of the program through increased investment in Oregon's key transportation infrastructure. The plan's proposed separation of Connect Oregon into 2 distinct segments with allocation for projects of statewide significance will ensure funds are dedicated strategically. As a state, it is imperative that we are moving goods competitively in an ever-changing global marketplace. The focus on connectivity between modes of transportation and improved efficiencies is instrumental in capitalizing on Oregon's existing strengths and looking to innovative future economic development opportunities. Secondly, the inclusion of a $25 million allocation for an intermodal transfer facility in the valley will be a tremendous benefit of the movement of freight in the state of Oregon. A facility of this nature will serve to reduce bottlenecks and congestion in our metropolitan areas. The ITF will increase connectivity and improve efficiencies within the state's freight transportation network. Looking to the future, it is of the utmost importance to create the best opportunities to improve freight mobility in Oregon. This project is particularly of importance to the shippers of the Coos Bay Rail Line. The potential opportunity for the line to connect directly with more than one Class 1 railroad and increased options of connectivity with other short line railroads in the state has a direct relationship with our ability to provide competitive shipping pricing. These shippers provide over 750 family wage jobs to the communities of Coos, Douglas, and Lane counties, and provide over $275 million in revenue along that line. The increased rail connectivity to one of Oregon's largest deep water ports is essential to diversifying the state's portfolio. Lastly, we are extremely pleased to see that the draft transportation package includes the creation of the Marine Navigation Improvement Fund to fund maintenance dredging in the state's ports. Dredging is a vital part of sustaining mobility throughout the waterways of all ports in Oregon. The port has partnered with Business Oregon to operate the state dredge, the Laura. This past year, our staff completed dredging in the port of Alsea. Both large and small ports are economic drivers for the region in which they operate. Maintaining our state waterways are essential as drivers to the economy and freight mobility. Again, I want to thank you for the countless hours you have dedicated to the development of this transportation package. The draft plan not only acknowledges the present needs of the state of Oregon's transportation network, but also the necessary investment in the future of our intermodal transportation network in a creative way.
Welcome, Mr. Neal.
Thank you. co-chairs McCune and Beyer, members of the committee, Representative Smith, my representative. My name is Gary Neal. I'm the general manager of the Port of Morrow. And I thank you very much for the opportunity to make comments here this evening. I've heard a lot of great things said, and they're well deserving of this committee and the effort that's been had to put forward a transportation package that's so critical for Oregon's future, not only in trying to maintain what we have, but to help grow our economy in this state. I know that the economy has rebounded, but our transportation infrastructure is behind the curve on this effort, and so I commend you in trying to put all of these pieces together to move it forward. The Port of Morrow is intricately involved in many components of transportation as it relates to freight mobility. We have rail, marine activities, and roads connecting to freeways. We also are involved in aviation as well. But your investment that you're talking about for freight mobility in intermodal hubs, the Ontario area is a key connector that needs to take place, as well as the one in the Willamette Valley area. Those are key components for future growth and helping actually mitigate some of the increased transportation demands that are putting on the system, and maybe that would help assist. The congestion that my shippers deal with trying to get to the export terminals in the Portland metropolitan area, whether they're trying to get to T6, hopefully in the future, or whether they're trying to get transportation up to the Puget Sound to meet those export ships is a real key part of efficient movement of freight. I know that we need to continue to make those investments to help all of the state of Oregon. Connect Oregon has been a real key component of some of the benefits we've been able to utilize and take advantage of, and I know that you've addressed Connect programs in the transportation package, and I know that you've broken it down to deep water as well as shallow draft areas and much needed capital intensive infrastructure that will help keep Oregon's freight moving to wherever it needs to go. I probably have a few more comments, but I'd just as soon go ahead and just close my comments and thank you for allowing me to be here to help encourage you and support the efforts that you've had, and looking forward to seeing you pass this legislation as well. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Senator Johnson.
I want to make sure that I understood Mr. McFarling's testimony. That if we add capacity, where does AORTA stand on this bill?
Well, I don't expect the legislature to be adding capacity this year, but I think we need to have a longer-term vision that moves in that direction.
Let me rephrase. Much of the bill is focused on three big road projects in the metropolitan area.
That's correct. That is not appropriate, in my opinion.
Thank you. And one other comment.
Mr. Johnson.
I appreciate the fact that Mr. Burns and Mr. Neal at least mentioned aviation. They seemed conspicuously missing on the list.
But they are well represented up here, Madam Chair.
Damn right they are.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam
Representative
Coach.
Smith, please.
Thank you, Madam Coach. I just want to point out, I think it's very admirable that two of Oregon's strongest economic development leaders from the Port of Coos Bay and the Port of Morrow recognize the importance of collaboration and working together, and that helping out Ontario or Albany or other parts of the state doesn't take away from their effort, but builds and collaborates for a statewide system. Thank you, gentlemen.
Mr. McFarland, I think I have a question for you as well. We've had a couple of things come up in conversation just in the last few days around passenger rail. One of them has to do with a potential study for the corridor between Wilsonville and Salem, and I didn't know if you had any comment on that. Another thing that's come to our attention is the fact that we have congestion on the main line through the valley, and part of it has to do with the length of sidings or the lack of sidings so that there can be some congestion relief between passenger and freight rail, and even maybe between freight rail and freight rail. Would you like to comment on those?
Well, absolutely. We need more capacity on the rail line all the way between Portland and Eugene. As I pointed out, most of our corridor is single-track alignment, and as you correctly pointed out, we have very relatively short sidings. In order to increase our on-time performance and to provide future capacity enhancements on passenger rail, we need to be looking at double-tracking that entire corridor, and perhaps in some places triple-tracking, like the state of Washington has.
Thank you. It's good. One of the conversations that I have been involved in had to do with the fact that when they built a lot of those sidings, they were of a certain length, and now trains are longer than the lengths of those sidings. Increasing the length of some of those sidings may be kind of an interim step in trying to deal with some of that congestion. Is that true?
Absolutely. Lengthening sidings would be helpful. One of the things that many people do not seem to understand is railroad companies have to pay taxes on all of the right-of-way and all of their improvements, unlike freeways and unlike aviation facilities. So there's a disincentive for railway companies to provide adequate infrastructure for the future. And that's one of the reasons we find ourselves in the position we are today.
I see. Thank you, gentlemen. Any further questions for this panel? Senator Johnson.
I'm just curious how you would deal with the land use issues as you're looking to triple track. Would you support counties exercising eminent domain to make sure that that could be accomplished?
Well, actually, most of the corridor between Portland and Eugene is already owned by the railroad companies, and most of it is 100 feet wide.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. We appreciate you being here tonight. On to our transit panel. Ms. Brown, Mr. McFarland, and Ms. Gordon, please. Thank you. Welcome. And thank you for traveling up here, Ms. Brown. We know how far you've driven as well.
I won't give you the mileage. Thank you. It's going to make me choke. So, co-chairs and vice chairs and community members, thank you again for giving me the opportunity to come and speak. For the record, my name is Julie Brown, and I'm with the Oregon Transit Association and also the general manager of the Rogue Valley Transportation District. I was going to do something a little different here so that you weren't completely bored tonight. So I wanted to remind you that we have, over the last few months, given you this packet, and it's probably in your office somewhere. And for those of you that don't know, there is a website, www.bettertransitoregon.org, and we invite you to go and look at it. This is a study that the Oregon Transit Association did on behalf of its members. I wanted to remind you this evening by 2050 that 23% of Oregonians will be over the age of 65. I personally will be a lot older than that. But I think that it's important to point this out, that we really are building the future for our children, our grandchildren, and also probably our great-grandchildren. Although it's about, a lot of times you hear about the big three, and no offense, Neil, Chariots, TriMet, or LTD, I wanted to kind of draw your attention to something about the state of Oregon. The percentage of household income spent on transportation, if you look at this closely and look at the rural areas, 34% of income in Pendleton is spent on transportation, 36% Roseburg, 35% Klamath Falls. And this is all taken from the census. So you can see that in a lot of our rural areas, transportation is very costly. Tonight, I am wearing two hats. I'm going to talk about not only the 10 agencies that you will see in the study, but also the other 80 transit agencies that this bill will impact. This will lift transit across the state, and if you look closely at all those dots, that is where the transit systems are throughout the state of Oregon. And now I'm going to put on my other hat real quick and talk about the Rogue Valley. By 2050, again, 20.8% of the people living in the Rogue Valley will be over the age of 65. So we're preparing for a system that will not only meet the needs of the general public and our children, but also for people like myself who will be in that age bracket that will need transportation. RVTD presently provides 1.5 million rides each year. 62% of the riders have no vehicle, and 66% of our riders make less than $15,000 a year. So as you can see, in the Rogue Valley, transit is very important. In this slide, we talked about in our study what we would do if we received the money. For the Rogue Valley, the enhanced services, Saturday service frequency, expanded evening hours, we were actually already able to achieve. And that was because we were able to pass a property measure last May and bring those services back online. But we are looking at new services that are critical. An express route that would run from Ashland to, or excuse me, from Medford to Ashland and back. Services in the city of Central Point and in also in Ashland. But we also know that there's a lot of low-income areas that have built up housing developments outside of our service areas that we know that are next on our agenda for expanded services. So we're looking at a crosstown right now that will actually meet some of those needs. With this money, it'll provide 95% more jobs within 60 minutes from downtown Ashland and 30% more jobs within 60 minutes from downtown Medford. So this is critical for our workforce. The frequent transit will also increase 8% more of our residents in the area will be able to actually access the transit system without having to go 2 to 3 miles to get to it. We'll be able to provide those neighborhood areas with transit that we aren't able to serve today. An overall 36% increase in total service hours. The statewide impact, again, I want to really emphasize statewide. We will see a 37% increase in transit statewide in the hours that are served. And one of the things that I know that in this House Bill amendments and Dash 3 amendments, there has been some letters and also some emails to us. Sorry, I fell for you. I've been there. Some of our members have let us know that they're concerned about the way the bill has been drafted. And so we are working with the ODOT staff right now to address how the funds will be distributed. So I do want to let you know that presently the Oregon Transit Association, along with ODOT, are working on those amendments. So I'm now going to turn this over to my colleagues and let them start talking. But I do want to, I wanted to kind of set this up because over the next few nights, you'll be hearing not only from my colleagues, but also constituents throughout the state who will be telling their stories. So thank you.
Madam Chair, Senator, before you move on, don't leave us in suspense. What are the issues? I mean, we don't have very much time, and rather than saying your folks object, what do they object to?
So what presently, the way the bill is written, the money would be distributed to ODOT, who would then distribute it to mass transit districts, transit districts, and counties. A lot of the city municipalities were concerned that they were not named as recipients of this money. But this is built up that the money is distributed by the amount of money that is put into the county, so the money would then be distributed to the county and given out in a kind of a grant process, very similar to our special transportation fund. And they just were concerned that they weren't named as direct recipients.
Senator.
Just as a follow-up, ODOT's not writing the bill, the committee is, so I would suggest you send your comments directly
right.
to Patrick so we have them.
Mm-hmm. We have. I'm sorry. Excuse me, Co-Chair. Sorry, Chair McEwen and Senator Boquist. We have sent our comments to Patrick. We've just been working with those ODOT staff to make sure that everyone is captured in this. Again, we go back to the 80 transit agencies, and because they are all built around a different mechanism, we have to make sure that everyone understands that it's lifting transit statewide, not just the transit districts and the counties.
Thank you. Chair Beyer.
Thank you, Mayor. Julie, as you know, the intent was not to direct the money to the counties or the cities. Where you have an established transit district, it was easier. We've got, I think it was 100 and some of these different programs. The idea is to build a network in the rural areas and through a granting program, force those agencies to somewhat combine and put a network together for the various regions of the state.
Senator Johnson.
Also, the way that you describe it, you make it sound like an entitlement. Not all transit districts are organized or operated the same, and I feel very strongly that there needs to be an accountability piece so that we're buying the right buses, we've got the right routes, we are expanding routes, we're expanding service hours, and it's not just give us the money so we can continue to do more of the same. And I cast no aspersions on anybody in the room. Anytime anybody's critical of transit, it's like harm to one is harm to all. I want to be clear, I'm a transit advocate, but I am also an advocate of well-run, accountable transit systems with auditable books.
Can I address that? Co-chair.
Yes, please.
McEwen and Senator Johnson, I agree with you, and I don't want it to sound like it's an entitlement, and the money wouldn't just be given to these transit systems. Again, there is a whole process set up in statute that we would have to go through with the plan showing exactly how the money would be spent. It would have to be a buy-off of the counties, and that's where the counties come into play. It would have to be a buy-off of not only ODOT, but also the Oregon Transit Commission, Transportation Commission.
Yes, Senator Winters. I just have a processing and time question, because I think this is the first time, and I'm glad that the good senator asked you to tell us what the issue and problem is, and so, and then now we need to get some language, as or do we, because we're kind of ready to rock and roll in this panel, and she's brought up some new wrinkles.
She has, Senator, and I believe there will be other suggestions for amendments. The process that we are looking at right now is the hearing tonight, the hearing tomorrow night, and a hearing Wednesday night. We will have to have any suggestions to us very, very quickly so that then we can process those, decide as a committee if they are amendments that we want to accept. They will then have to go down to LC for drafting. So we're on a very, very tight timeline. So the message to everyone is if you have suggestions, they need to come to us very, very quickly. Yes. Welcome.
Who's next?
Thank you very much, Co-Chair McEwen and Co-Chair Beyer and the rest of the committee. My name is Janine Gordon. I am an enrolled tribal member of the Walla Walla and Cayuse tribes. I am the public transit program manager and operate Kayak Public Transit in Eastern Oregon. We are grateful for the state of Oregon's focus on transportation funding package and wish to share benefits to transit in our region. The Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation operates Kayak Public Transit, which transports tribal and non-tribal community members throughout the region by providing fixed routes connecting people to two states, four counties, and 17 communities. Public transportation is a vital lifeline in rural Oregon. Kayak Public Transit riders are workers, seniors, people with disabilities, veterans, families residing in southeastern Oregon, Washington, or southeastern Washington and northeastern Oregon communities. Transit allows our communities' residents to safely get to work, school, college, healthcare facilities, public service agencies, and to access other essential goods and services. Public transportation provides quality of life to many rural residents who do not have personal transportation and need access to public services and health care. Umatilla County has a median household income nearly $5,000 under the median household income of Multnomah County. Kayak Public Transit provides an economic boost to the communities we serve. The money that our riders save on fuel and vehicle wear and tear is spent at places of businesses in our local communities. Likewise, transit reduces the number of vehicles on the road and allows for improved freight mobility. Public transportation provides our communities with improved air quality and reduced environmental harm from fossil fuel consumption. Kayak Public Transit provides a safe transportation option for commuters and passengers who would normally travel by car on rural roads and highways, thereby decreasing vehicle congestion and the accident probability rate. We need additional funding to sustain and grow the transportation system that our communities rely on to survive and thrive. Increased funding would allow Kayak Public Transit to reduce wait times on major route runs from 2 to 4 hours to 1 to 2 hours, reestablish service between Umatilla, Oregon and Tri-Cities, Washington, connect service between Irrigan and Rufus, which would make it possible for riders to utilize public transit connections from Ontario to Portland, provide transportation for employees to and from the Port of Morrow, where there is a severe housing shortage, allow even more reliable and safe transportation options, economic boosts, environmental benefits, and ultimately community value to rural Eastern Oregon. Our public transit system was named Kayak as a reference to Cayuse Nez word Kayak, which means to be free of obstructions. We believe that transportation in our region will continue to improve with the state's investment in transit. Thank you.
Welcome, sir.
Good afternoon, co-chairs McEwen and Beyer. My name is Neil McFarland. I'm TriMet's general manager. And I thank you for the opportunity to appear before you and indicate our strong support for HB 2017. I want to compliment the committee for the depth and breadth and hard work necessary to bring this bill forward to this point. I wanted to touch on three aspects of the bill. One is the overall legislation, one is the regional congestion piece, and of course then finally the transit component. And first I would just note the public transportation community supports the overall bill and recognize the importance of a multimodal system. Not one mode, be it transit, freight, highway, a marine, auto, bicycle, sidewalks, any can function effectively alone. We have an integrated system that works in synchronicity, and we believe this bill is very balanced and has a very strong systems approach and compliment you for that. Second, we are very supportive of the regional congestion relief district concept. We recognize that metropolitan areas such as Portland have transportation challenges that are beyond the scope of less dense regions. Yet the congestion in Portland impacts freight commodity movements for all of Oregon, and congestion for all of us leads to reduced productivity, reduced competitiveness, and less time with our family. So we believe the shared responsibility concept is that's noted in this bill is innovative, it's equitable, and it provides a much needed pathway forward for Oregon transportation. Finally, related to the public transportation portion of the bill, addresses a number of long-standing challenges across our state. First, I think, as my colleagues noted, it's the first true statewide general transit operating resource Oregon has ever had. The cigarette tax, which is in place today, has allowed for sporadic, I would say, bare-bones service for elderly and people with disabilities, but no real opportunity for small and medium-sized communities to establish even minimal general transit service. As our population ages, as our disabled populations increase, as we address poverty in smaller communities, the need for public transportation options outside the metropolitan area grows. The proposed payroll tax in the bill is modest, but the funding will be destination. Second, for TriMet, the increased revenue will allow us to respond to some critical pressing community concerns. We will use these additional funds to implement a low-income fare program for those below 200% of the federal poverty level. We will also use these additional resources to expand services to concentrations of affordable housing in areas like East Portland, Beaverton, or Oregon City, connecting those areas with lower-income residents to jobs and job centers in Washington County, the Columbia Corridor, Troutdale, Clackamas Industrial Area, and others. And the added funds will allow us to add services in the region's most congested travel corridors, where we're seeing an explosion of multiple family housing construction that's helping fulfill our regional land use goals, but challenging our transportation infrastructure. Finally, there are some important accountability measures in this bill, and we strongly support all of those. So in conclusion, the TriMet and the entire transit community supports HB 2017, and we congratulate the committee for your work on it so far. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. McFarland. Questions for this panel? Yes, sir.
The first young lady that spoke just should realize that Senator Winters and I don't think 65 is old.
Not at all.
Neither do I.
Other questions? Thank you very much for traveling down here and up here tonight. We appreciate your presence and your testimony. Our construction panel up next, Mr. Gray, Mr. Wildish, and Ms. Tatman. We appreciate your patience very much. We know it's been a rather long evening, so thank you so much for hanging in here with us.
Thank you. Good afternoon anymore. So
it is not afternoon now.
Co-chairs and co-vice chairs, members of the committee. My name is Brian Gray. I'm the president of Knife River and also serving this year as AGC's president for the Associated General Contractors. I first want to thank you for all the work that you've put in for many months. I first testified in front of your commission 51 weeks ago at PCC on June 13th.
Right.
It's been that long. And since then, have been to several of your committees talking about congestion, talking about accountability, have met with you individually, worked with OTC. And so I just want to commend you for the work that you've done to this point. And you've drafted a bill that is very comprehensive. And you've taken the data that you've been given, and you've taken kind of an engineering and scientific approach to this bill and come up with a package that is needs-based. It's not necessarily politically looked at. You took a needs-based, an engineering approach, and I appreciate that. I have a unique perspective, perhaps, being president of Knife River. We have operations in 20 of the counties, so you've heard a lot from individual counties. We've done work in every county. We're multimodal. We move rock by rail. We own our train, our own cars for the trains. We have a barge. We move it by water. We have about 1,100 employees throughout the state of Oregon. Average income is $63,000. They are good family wage jobs. We are union and non-union, and so I do believe that I have a good perspective. 80% of our business is by public agencies. Most of our work comes from ODOT, counties, and cities. We also have, of those 1,100 employees, about 450 of them are driving heavy trucks today, tonight, tomorrow. Some of us would consider ourselves a trucking company, 450 dump trucks, ready-mix trucks, and so I understand the perspective of gas taxes and the weight mile tax from a trucking perspective. I look at the asphalt pavement conditions. That's what I'm going to focus on a little bit, is similar to your roof on your home. You know, it's actually very similar. We use the same asphalt liquid. They coat it sand and put it on paper. We coat rock and put it on dirt or subgrades. And so it is very similar. And that asphalt on your roof shingles, it oxidizes over time, and it begins to crack. And you maintain it. You take the moss off it. You clean it just like ODOT does and the cities do with their roads. They maintain them. However, there's a frequency that you have to replace that roof. And as painful as it is, and it does cost money, nobody wants to do it. It's a good investment to maintain the structure underneath that roof. And that's what you're doing by preserving the roadways. We were awarded a project. Many of you drove on it probably on the way to Salem today. It's a paving project on I-5 from Wilsonville to Woodburn. It's a 10-mile section that we're all anxious to get rid of the ruts and begin to repair that section. It's 10 miles, three lanes both directions. And so that would be 60 lane miles. And we awarded that contract for construction for about $7 million. So that's right at $125,000 per lane mile. I met with my estimators this morning and asked, you know, if we kick the can down the road. And had we not had funding, ODOT not had funding to go and preserve that section of pavement, what are the alternatives? And really, that's what you're faced with on this bill is, can we do it, and can we do it now versus maybe waiting for some later generation to do this? The cost of doing that project, that was $7 million, would probably be close to $40 to $50 million if we let it erode to the point where you've got to go and completely replace it. We're doing the work at night from 10 a.m. or from 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. So all three lanes in both directions are open to traffic during the daytime. For a total rebuild, if we kick the can down the road, the only option is you'd build a temporary road in the median. You build temporary bridges. I mean, you build a whole other I-5 to go do this work. And the scenario is real, and it's up and down I-5 from Medford to Portland. It's on 97, and that's a real situation. And so that's just an example of the work that we're doing. So I strongly urge you to do this and act now. The other reason I'd ask you to act now is we are not doing nearly the amount of paving that we used to do for ODOT. That's kind of the big measurement, and most of the cities and counties would follow those types of tonnages. Last year, ODOT paved 1.7 million tons of asphalt. This year, it's right at 800,000 tons, less than half of what they paved last year. It's one of the lowest numbers. The 2017 tonnage is one of the lowest that I've seen in 24 years that I've been working in this industry. What that means is our workforce is going to other states that passed the transportation package. And you heard the governor earlier talk about the importance of jobs and building the economy to try to help the other larger massive problem that the state faces. I would suggest that, you know, keeping our workers, our construction workers here in the state is really, really critical. I've got a portable asphalt plant right now that's sitting in Idaho because it's not paving projects in Oregon. My competitor, who's in the back of the room, has an asphalt plant sitting up in Washington. Our good people, both at the agency, the engineering levels, and our contractors, are starting to go find work where other states have passed their transportation plan. We can't afford to lose that. And so, again, I strongly urge you to act now. On behalf of AGC, I will tell you that we are here to stand by your side, to do whatever we need to do to defend this package and help you along the way. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Good. Welcome.
Thank you. Co-Chair McEwen, Co-Chair Beyer, Vice Co-Chairs and Committee Members, good evening. I'm Steve Wildish, Vice President of Wildish Construction Company. Wildish is a family business of 82 years, located in Eugene, headquartered there, employing about 350 construction workers throughout the state of Oregon. I'm speaking on behalf of a coalition of Oregon construction contractors, labor organizations, and their associations. I want to begin by saying our industry appreciates this committee's hard work and resolve in developing a comprehensive transportation package. Our highway infrastructure is rapidly deteriorating, congestion is accelerating, investing in our transportation future is more important now than ever before. The transportation package you put together fairly addresses governance of ODOT and accountability of ODOT. But following up on Senator Johnson's previous query, it does not adequately address local government accountability. Our coalition is concerned about public agencies self-performing work without accountability. We're advocating for changes in ORS 279C305. Current law requires agencies to construct public improvement projects at the least cost to the taxpayer. We agree with this policy. Our proposed amendment requires clear and objective cost accounting and includes a reasonable enforcement process, which is missing in the current law. The least cost analysis is required to protect the public's investment. Let us compete for the work, or if not, let it be with transparency and accountability. We ask that you support our proposed amendments to the public contracting provisions and include those amendments in the transportation package you're considering today. Again, we applaud your leadership in putting together the transportation package. It is an incredibly complicated and difficult task. preserving, maintaining, and improving our transportation infrastructure is of critical importance to our state. We owe you a great debt. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wildish. Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Wildish, you will be happy to know that I, as a member of the House Rules Committee, we have a bill in the House Rules Committee, 3203, that deals with just that issue, that we are moving through the process as we speak.
Great. Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Mr. Wildish, you heard Mr. Vile testify that he was paying more for rock and asphalt and gravel. And in prior discussions of the committee, we have discussed an aggregate tax. What would that aggregate tax do in terms of driving the cost of projects up?
Well, anytime you tax a product, the full value of that tax, at least in our experience, does not get passed down. But honestly, the greatest concern we have with that tax is that it affects the Highway Trust Fund. And in fact, can be thought of as a backhanded way to get to trust fund dollars, because about 60% of all the gravel goes to public projects. The other thing is, once you set up a tax that could be used for anything, increased at any time, we're afraid of the slippery slope effect and the uncertainty of the future of that.
Thank you. One more follow-up.
Senator.
Do you have language for that accountability piece? I worked, as many of the other people did, on the accountability task force that was a subset of our committee here, and I feel very strongly that that ought to be included in the accountability piece of a larger bill. Do you have that language prepared and ready?
Yes, we have an amendment ready to go.
And have you sent it to Mr. Brennan?
Yes, I believe so.
And Senator, we do indeed. I have some language I can share with you from the bill that's in the House Rules Committee as well.
Yeah. Well, to follow up, as long as you've engaged this, I'd like to see the threshold go lower, and I'd like to see the accountability piece put into this bill. So thank you for having your language prepared.
Thank you, Senator.
Yes, Representative McLean.
Well, to that piece, first of all, this other bill has been worked on for the entire session, and I've had people in my office, you know, back and forth on some of these amendments, and I'd like to see that cleaned up in the rules rather than put into this package right now. But the other issue that I thought you were talking about on that was basically local accountability. And one of the other pieces that this bill has in it is the website, and also the commitment from the local jurisdictions to make sure that they have a process that will be part of that website that talks about accountability of their projects as well as the state projects. So have you made any comments, or have you turned in to Patrick any support or lack of support or changes on the website or some of the other transparent ways that we would be looking at cleaning up and making sure that we are aware of any issues at the local level as well as the state?
Chair McEwen, Senator Beyer, Representative McLean, I'm not aware of the website personally. I appreciate the fact that there is a tool in the package that makes things easier, that can lead towards more transparency at the very least. But I really can't comment too much on it because I don't know much about it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Vice Chair Benz.
Thank you. So 9 years ago, we passed the Jobs and Transportation Act. We raised the gas tax 6 cents. This time, we're looking at raising it 6 cents and perhaps two more for 14 over a period of 10 years. I'm curious, as you guys look back 9 years, how much more projects that you will be bidding on cost? Have they doubled in cost over the 9 years, or they've gotten a lot cheaper in cost over the last 9 years? Give us your best guess as to a similar project that you might bid now 9 years later, and how much more on a percentage basis would it cost?
Yeah, Representative McEwen and Representative Benz, that's a great question, and I don't have an exact answer. What I could tell you is that the materials that we use ebb and flow and fluctuate a lot by the energy sector and oil. And so asphalt liquid, it has, at one point in time, I think you heard today, it was at $600 or $700 per ton, and it also got down as low as $200 a ton within that nine-year period. Same with fuel, same with cement. So our raw materials that are very much energy-based to produce kind of follows that same curve, cost curve. When it comes to our fuel, the 6 cents per gallon, I would say that was absorbed and probably did not come across in a cost of a project that ODOT or the state would see as much as the cost of asphalt liquid, cement, or potentially other taxes on the raw materials.
Follow up. Yeah, okay, my question was, the same project, a mile of asphalt, same everything today as compared to 9 years ago, how much more? Wild guess, 10% more, 20% more, 50% more, or has it increased at all?
It's significant. We have some ODOT people behind us who probably could answer that better. but I can tell you for sure it is significantly higher. Our labor costs, all our costs have gone up significantly higher. And Brian's right, the transport or the oil, for example, fluctuates. Now it's been pretty high here recently.
Can I follow up?
Yes, sir.
I still haven't heard an answer, but is it twice as much? No. Is it a third more? And what I'm getting at here is we did it 6 cents 9 years ago. Now we're talking 6 cents again. Does that mean we're going to get half as much projects out of this 6 cents as we did 9 years ago? If we want to get the same amount, would we have to raise it 12 cents? That's my question.
We'd like to get you some written answers on that. Intuitively, I can tell you that the cost of aggregate, something that we produce, has gone up very little. I have to go back and look at 9 years ago. The cost of asphalt liquid, which drives the cost of road construction, has literally changed 3 to 4-fold. I'd have to go back and look 9 years ago. It may actually, we might surprise ourselves, and Mr. Wildish might be stand corrected, that it's not substantially more today than it was 9 years ago because of the cost of asphalt liquid, which makes up the majority of the cost of road construction. Yes, labor and fuel, and there are other components of that, but I'd really have to go back and look because the cost of aggregate, the cost of ready mix, has not changed substantially in that nine-year period. And so I will get that information to you. It'll be easy for us to find that by tomorrow.
Thank you.
That would be great. Mr. Wildish.
I was going to say, some people build bridges too, Brian. So, asphalt.
Yes. Okay. Yes, we do too.
Ms. Tatman.
Thank you for your patience, ma'am.
Absolutely. Good evening, co-chairs McEwen, Beyer, co-vice chairs, and the joint committee. I'm Karen Tatman. I'm a practicing engineer with Quincy Engineering, and we're based here in Salem. Quincy is a firm that specializes in highway transportation projects, and we are very active with ODOT. We're working on several projects with them. In addition, I'm the current president of the American Council of Engineering Companies of Oregon. We're a professional organization that represents 115 engineering companies of all types and sizes and 3,500 employees across Oregon. I'm honored and pleased to have this opportunity to add ACEC's strong support for the many facets of House Bill 2017. You've heard a lot of praises tonight, and I'm just going to pile on. ACEC has watched with anticipation of your year-long efforts and have appreciated the manner in which you have actually mirrored engineering protocol as you developed this impressive proposal. We see it as you've taken a page out of our book. You sought local input to determine the needs and to appreciate the size and scope of the key issues facing Oregonians. You defied convention by looking at new and innovative funding mechanisms to create the cash flow actually needed to find solutions. And you'll continue to look at innovative ways to deliver projects. Your work has been impressive, and we applaud you. We thank you for bringing forward a bold, long-term transportation package. Sustainable funding has been sorely needed. ACEC has reviewed the bill draft, and we see it will create all types of projects and improvements statewide. The bill identifies changes in structure and governance to both ODOT and the OTC, ACEC has met with several of you in person to discuss our recommendations on agency improvements, and we look forward to further discussions going forward. ACEC Oregon and the engineering consultant community stand ready and able to help deliver projects that will result from this funding package. Please continue to consider us an asset and a partner to ODOT and to all local governments as we bring our expertise to ensure these projects are delivered on time and on budget. We'll bring innovation and best practices from our firms that work on projects throughout Oregon, throughout the region, and across the nation, where many other states have already passed significant transportation package. So we become an asset to Oregon and the other states in delivering challenging projects. Most importantly, the public, this legislature, and the governor, and local elected officials expect these funds to flow and projects to proceed. That will be the judge. For effective and efficient project delivery, we need good agency owners, including ODOT and local governments, during all phases of project delivery, planning, design, and construction. We need competent public agency staff to effectively scope and manage these projects. ACEC Oregon has a longstanding relationship with ODOT through committees that tackle procurement, project delivery methods and policies, and innovations. We meet regularly, and staff for companies like mine are often trained alongside ODOT staff. Further, over the past year, we found much common ground on this transportation package with AEE, the Association of Engineering Employees. That's the union that represents ODOT's technical engineering staff. The engineering consultant community is truly a partner in project delivery. We will continue to strongly support local agencies and ODOT in their owner role. We need ODOT and local agencies to be as strong and well-trained as possible to support on-time and on-budget delivery. We're here to do our role and help find solutions to Oregon's transportation problems. Thank you all again for your leadership on this important issue.
Thank you, Ms. Tatman. Any more questions for this panel? I would like to just finish up with a comment. It's clear, I think, to this committee that an aggregate tax has become not popular and successfully, I think, not become a part of the conversation at this particular point in time as we move forward. But I would be remiss if I did not draw attention to the fact that we must also fund non-highway modes of transportation. And finding that those dollars, those very, very rare dollars that are not tied to the state highway fund, is very, very difficult. And everyone that came before our multimodal committee, and I see some of you in the audience, I charged you with, if you don't like an aggregate tax, and lottery dollars are at a premium, we have a very small piece carved out of the excise tax if it's successful. And it's going to raise probably less than $10 million a year. And we want to get back to that $100 million investment in multimodal infrastructure. What is it going to be? And I don't want to lose sight of the fact that that is a question at some point that we need to answer. In the governor's budget, we have $71 million in lottery funds addressed. We hope that we can maintain that. That's a question that is unanswered at this point, but we'll hope that that will be available. But the question continues to be, what's it going to be moving forward? Because we cannot divest in the multimodal infrastructure the way we've been divesting in our highway infrastructure. So I want to charge you all with continuing to keep that thought in the forefront as we move forward. And I just want to make sure that we do not lose sight of the fact that this is an issue that we need to continue to address. Gentlemen, thank you, Ms. Tatman.
Thank you.
We have one more panel. We started 10 minutes late. We're going to be awfully close. Thank you all for your patience. I would like to call up Ms. McCurdy, Ms. Hagerbaumer, and Mr. Kransky, please.
Hello.
Our esteemed panel number 10.
But it's okay.
Please begin.
Okay, I guess I'll start.
Thank you.
Good evening, co-chairs Representative McEwen and Senator Beyer and members of the committee. My name is Mary Kyle McCurdy, representing 1,000 Friends of Oregon on this panel, but I'd like to note that 1,000 Friends of Oregon is a member of Oregon of Transportation for Oregon's Future Coalition, and that is the group that we represent here tonight. And to prevent redundancy, we've divided up the topics that we're going to speak to. And I want to start by expressing our appreciation for the time and effort that this committee has put into this really gargantuan task, starting with the hearings you held last summer. And you worked hard to engage a broad array of Oregonians, and that's reflected in the package that you've brought. So I'm going to address the transit aspects of the package before you. A transportation system for the future provides options for how workers get to work, lets children walk and bike safely to and from school, and allows older persons and Oregonians with disabilities to get where they need to go, and ensures that freight is efficiently transported by truck, rail, and other modes. Transit especially is a lifeline of opportunity for those who have the fewest options, including in particular lower-income Oregonians and those who do not or cannot drive, our youth and our seniors, many seniors. Therefore, we thank you for including in this package a statewide funding option for transit, and at a meaningful level. The proposed employee payroll tax of 0.1% will raise $107 million annually, and it will make a difference. Transit was one of the top priorities this committee heard in its tour across the state, no matter the size or location of the community. All Oregonians need convenient and reliable transit service, whether they're in an urban area or a rural area. And currently, Oregon woefully underfunds transit compared to other states. The state of Oregon provides about 3% of the transit operation funding compared to about a 25% national average. This bill will change that and must remain a core element of the package. So while we support the transit funding in this package, the proposed method, an employee payroll tax, is regressive, especially when considering that a much higher percentage of low-income people also take transit, and so will be paying a fare. And I think you saw that in the slide given by the Rogue Valley Transit District, the percentage of low-income people or people without a car who take and depend upon transit. And your subgroup recognized that and proposed a mitigation element in this packet. And that's addressed in section, 122P on pages 263 through 265. However, we find the bill method that's described there a little bit clunky, and we have submitted to Patrick already a change in how that mitigation can be approached. So in that section requires each transit provider to submit a public transportation improvement plan to receive the transit funding. However, that public transportation improvement plan requires the transit provider to report only on how it used funding in the past year to mitigate the impact of the payroll tax on low-income households. The bill lists four specific actions that must be addressed, and they're very good. We support those. But it's that look back that we think is not adequate. It would miss the first year of funding, for example, because it does not require a report until after a provider has already received funds from this bill. And second, the really critical issue is how will the transit provider meet the need with funds, with the funds for which they are applying. So we have submitted language that would require an affirmative statement that in order to qualify for funding provided under this bill, the public transit improvement plan must identify steps, the provider must identify steps it will take in coordination with community involvement to mitigate the impact of the tax on low-income households, including the measures that are included in the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mary Kyle, perhaps I missed it, at least when we were drafting it. One of the requirements that we came out of the subcommittee or the work group, I should say, was that in order to get the money, that an agency would have to produce a service plan which would address those points, you know. I think we were talking about reach, frequency, and specifically low-income services. So it seems like that would be addressed up front, and then they would have to report annually on how they've done to achieve that. There's no entitlement to the money. There's an opportunity, as long as they can satisfy the Transportation Commission that they were doing that.
So, Co-Chair, Senator Beyer, I do believe that is what you spoke about. There's a separate section of the bill that is an end-of-the-year reporting requirement. And in this section, if you look at starting at page 263 at line 24, and I'll be glad to talk about this with Patrick, it requires that the provider report only on how the funds were used in the prior fiscal year. And we think that language should change to say how you plan to use them in the coming fiscal, in the coming year, for which you're applying, not that you're entitled to them, as part of the public transportation improvement plan. So I do agree. I think that was the intent. And if the language, it doesn't seem clear to me and to others who have read it. So thank you. That's great if that was the intent, and we'd like to work with the language to make that clear if it's not. Thank you.
Co-chairs McEwen, Beyer, members of the committee. My name is Garrick Kransky. I'm the policy director with the Street Trust, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify this evening. I also want to thank you for all the work you've put in over the last year plus putting together this package. My comments today will focus on the parts of the package that address safety on our streets and how, with a few small amendments, we can dramatically increase our return on investment. We are grateful to see a package that invests in transit, as Mary Kyle said. This is a critical need in all of our communities, and House Bill 2017 makes a down payment towards reducing congestion by providing Oregonians more choices for how they get around. Thank you for making that commitment. Regarding the revamped Connect Oregon program, I want to thank you for including a funding target of $15 million for bicycle and pedestrian projects. Maintaining and expanding this investment will allow us to build commuter trails to help reduce congestion. While our organization does not support a new sales tax on bicycles, we know that people need more safe places to walk and ride bikes. We prefer the Oregon legislature raise revenue for more trails from a broad base, including all trail users and all industries that benefit from trails. Regarding the safe routes to school component of the package, unfortunately, it falls short of a comprehensive approach to creating safe streets for kids and reducing congestion from morning and afternoon drop-offs and pickups at school. This could be a huge missed opportunity, and amendments are needed before my organization can support the package. Safe Routes to School is an initiative with a 12-year-long track record of success that combines street safety improvements with near schools with education and encouragement programs to make it safe and accessible for kids and families to choose to walk, bike, and access transit to school. Street safety projects alone only increase walking and biking by about 20%. When these projects are completed at the same time as education and encouragement programs, about 40% more kids walk and bike to school. At a time when congestion is a growing problem and the costs of building roads are rising, we cannot afford to ignore this return on investment. We've addressed these issues in the form of House Bill 3230, and I ask that you please support the inclusion of the language from House Bill 3230 in place of the current Safe Routes to School package in this proposal. To be clear, our priorities for amendments are to remove the 10-year sunset on the program, expand the street safety funding component to $15 million, fund the in-school education and encouragement programs that are a proven success. Please include criteria for prioritizing Title I or low-income schools so that they can receive the safety projects. We'd like to see some flexibility in the local match requirement for those Title I schools. And we'd like to expand the radius of projects eligible to receive Safe Routes to School investment to 1 mile. Only by taking this comprehensive approach will we be effective at creating safe routes to schools for kids and encouraging more families to walk, bike, and take transit to school. I really appreciate your consideration of this issue and its inclusion in the package. Thank you.
Ms. Hagerbaum, welcome.
Good evening, co-chairs, members of the committee. I'm last, but hopefully not least, also known as Chris Hagerbaumer, Deputy Director at Oregon Environmental Council. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak. And I echo all of the earlier comments about, wow, you guys were super transparent, super dedicated in figuring out how to put this package together. Thank you so much. This package does have a big price tag, but the right transportation investments will reduce costs for businesses, individuals, and state and local governments. We know when potholes and congestion rule the roads, vehicles cost more to operate, people lose precious time sitting in traffic, and goods aren't delivered on time. We know that providing transportation options reduces household transportation costs, and we know that investing in cleaner transportation options reduces health care costs and the economic impacts of climate change. So we applaud you for going big. So We also know that these transportation problems can't have to be solved in a fundamentally different way than they were in the past. So when you're driving a car, you have to look in the rearview mirror. But when you're putting together a transportation package, we need to look into the future. And there's a number of trends. For example, the baby boomers that were mentioned earlier, who, in order to age in place, need transportation options. For example, the millennials, who are driving less even post-recession. You add those two categories of folks together, they represent more than half of Oregon's population. There are other trends that are important to consider. Per capita miles are decreasing, not increasing. And technology is something that we really haven't talked about at all tonight. PricewaterhouseCoopers predicts the number of vehicles on the road will fall from 245 million to 2.4 million vehicles by 2025. Now, that's kind of sounds crazy, but milder predictions say that traffic will drop by a factor of 10, and that's going to be super useful. One more thing, and this is really a threat, the fact that we need to address greenhouse gas emissions in this state. Transportation represents more than almost 40% of those emissions, and we need to do something with that. So I echo the comments that Mary Kyle made about transit, and would just say again, wow, this is the first huge, dedicated source of funding for transit in the state. It is going to make a huge difference for rural communities and urban communities. I just couldn't applaud you more for that. I echo the comments that Garrick made related to safe routes to school and bicycle and pedestrian improvements. Headed to roads and freight, I think this package will go a long way to helping us fix state, county, and city roads, as well as the important freight infrastructure through Connect Oregon. We do appreciate the fact that stakeholders all over the state did ask for dealing with these big bottlenecks in the Portland region. I think that some of those types of things are definitely warranted. But to reduce congestion, we actually need to utilize a variety of tools. Not only the providing of more options, but the use of smart technologies like synchronized traffic lights, prioritized bus movements, and so on. But the most effective tool over the long run, and you included this in the package, is the concept of congestion pricing, also called peak period pricing or value pricing, and that's particularly important, and I'm glad that you included that. We were surprised to see a number of other road capacity projects included in the bill. I just would want to make sure that those were the really top priorities in the regional transportation plans and transportation system plans. Those trends that I mentioned earlier mean, honestly, we aren't going to need to invest as much in road capacity as we have in the past. The other point that has not been brought up tonight is electric vehicles. We are not going to meet our greenhouse gas emission goals without accelerating the movement towards electric vehicles for buses, for cars, light-duty vehicles, and even for trucks, ultimately. But the most effective way to do that is to do a cash-on-the-hood type of assistance that's outlined in House Bill 2704. This package makes a small nod to the EVs using public purpose charges for infrastructure. That's not actually what is needed as much, and my understanding is there's some complications with using the public purpose charge. And I have to say, we just don't love that tiered registration fee. And I will say the reason why is that only 2% of the vehicles in the state currently get more than 40 miles per gallon. And it sends a particularly odd signal. Could we wait until a few more were out there before we started tiering the registration fee? So what else would I say? Thank you again. Oh, there's one piece in there about adopting a statewide transportation strategy on greenhouse gas emissions. That was actually asked for back in the Jobs and Transportation Act, and I sat on the committee, as many people behind me did, to develop that strategy. I don't think we need to go through a whole new process. I mean, maybe we could just adopt the one that we've already developed. Accountability. Thank you for addressing accountability. We actually do have some suggestions for improving that that I believe have already been submitted to Patrick as well. So thank you again for acting in a spirit of wise stewardship for the state. And I'll leave it at that.
Amen. Thank you. Questions for this panel?
Yes.
Senator.
Chris, a follow-up to your EV question, because I think, as you know, I'm discussing that. I think you're familiar with that. The EVs, there's pure electric vehicles, all battery. and then there's obviously the some of the hybrids. Is it your mind that the way is to enhance purely electric vehicles only, or do we do a tiered approach out 10 years in front of us?
Senator Boquist, Representative McEwen, I actually don't completely understand the question, but a movement towards any vehicles that are more fuel efficient is great. It's just that when it was presented to everybody way back when, that wasn't actually that long ago, 2 weeks, the little tiny sliver,
it's a long time for some
I
of
think it just was, two, again, 2% of the vehicles in the state, and I would just ask that we wait until a certain percentage of the vehicles are at that point before we start doing the tiered registration fee. Maybe by that time, actually, we will be along the way to doing the more of a mileage-based fee that could be varied by other things that we value in the state.
Yes, sir.
I believe you're talking about the tiering of the upper end, not the 0 to 20, 20 to 40. The upper end is what you're discussing, correct?
One quick follow-up, Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
In terms of, as you said, I mean, the goal would either be to do petroleum electric, hybrid electric vehicles, or purely electric vehicles, which are battery operated and charged only. But what I think I hear you saying is whatever it is that gets us to high efficiency is the best way to go. Okay, got it. Thanks.
Any other questions, comments?
I wanted to correct, because there's been comments about baby boomers, and there's been comments about the over 65, and then my good senator that's sitting here to my left recognized that he's part of the chronologically advantaged group. Some of us have been around these buildings for a long time, and I think that having a committee of 14 and the process that we've used, and recognizing that we're one Oregon, and I say that with all its fondness, because everything that this body has attempted to do was in recognition that we all were one Oregon. And I was thinking, as the gentleman was talking about, and as a person who raised their children in schools and talking about safe schools, some of the initiatives that probably work in the metropolitan and in the valley and what have you may not be the same initiative that one would get if one is talking about Vail or Ontario. I'm normally in human services or in other parts of the building. And I have to say, in going through this process with you on transportation, it was probably the most informational and input that I have seen in this building in an awfully long time. And so I just need to put that on the record, because as this body looks to One Oregon, it's looking beyond just the northern part of our state or the coastal part of our state, but it's also taking into consideration of the southeastern tips of our state, the central part of our state, the northeastern part of our state, all of which contributes to making certain that our system actually benefits all. Yep. So with that,
thank you, Senator. Yes. Senator Johnson.
This is not a question for this panel, but it's a more global process question. Who invited tonight's panels?
Okay. We'll turn this over to staff, Senator.
Madam Chair. Senator Johnson, direction from the co-chairs was go and try to engage the groups and folks that were involved in the work groups primarily. Okay. So there were some holes that were found. Those are completely on myself. I relied on about 14 different people to do most of the legwork, but still managed to, through fault of my own, miss a couple. And
well,
some
this
people
is not to assign
things.
Fault, and yeah. I'm not bitching about airports, yeah, yeah. But
maybe just a little.
Tonight, no. I think this is more important. Tonight, we heard from all of the people that are going to be project beneficiaries. Who we did not hear from are the people that are going to be paying the freight. We didn't hear from AAA. We heard tangentially from the truckers through Mr. Wildish and Mr. Gray. We didn't hear from any auto dealers, and given that they are an important funding mechanism, I hope that they will be included as invited testimony going forward.
Mr. Brennan can address that, ma'am.
Madam Chair, Senator, there were groups that were invited that declined.
And that speaks volumes to me. If we're going to have this open process, we've agreed to have transparent conversations, and I think that it is incumbent upon folks to have those, to be allowed to have those conversations. And if there are people with criticisms but are afraid to brook them because they don't want to tank the package or they've been muzzled by somebody else, that thwarts our open process here. And I don't know how we can make an informed and responsible decision absent hearing from the folks that are going to be paying at the pumps. But that's just my opinion.
And, Senator, for the next two nights, we will have open testimony, and anyone is welcome to come and address us. And I'll turn it over to Patrick to give us the schedule for the next couple of days.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, due to the request by the Speaker's office, tomorrow's meeting will not start at the same time, 5 o'clock. They asked if Tuesday's meeting could start at 5:30, which is our normal start time. So we'll start tomorrow at 5:30. Wednesday, we'll be back to 5 o'clock, starting a little earlier. Makes us either gets out of here earlier or allows us to take a little more testimony before we leave at a regular time. We will have the stoplight up here tomorrow night. The plan, barring busloads of people showing up, is to offer 3 minutes, which we will monitor and enforce with the stoplight, Madam Chair. We'll have sign-up sheets outside of the hearing room half an hour before the meeting starts both days.
Anything else for the good of the order? All right. Thank you all. We're adjourned.